But I'm not impressed by your performance.
Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad.
We're not here just to take part. We're here to take over.
Hello and welcome along to Chapter 7 of What's the Story podcast. I'm Danny Murray and as always I'm joined by the great Lindsay Doyle.
Hello.
The not so great Graham Erigan.
Hell yeah.
And this week we have an amazing guest. Lindsay, are you going to take it or what?
No, I am.
I'm putting her under pressure now. Look. Yeah. So our guest this week is Saskia Toidy, who is a sailor and somebody who has a lot of potential in terms of the hope for Ireland, Rio 2016. Saskia, thanks man for popping along into us.
No, thanks for having me.
So we know nothing about sailing. So this could be a long hour. But it's going to be a bit of crack because Graham loves boats. Loves them. So.
And women.
Actually, I went whale watching in Sydney. I hate boats because I was getting sick everywhere. That's how I don't like boats. What are you looking for?
Sorry. But the whole sailing thing we'll get onto in a couple of minutes. Before that, we have our little intro housekeeping type thing that we need to do, which includes this week my whole pledge not to swear, thanks to Graham Merrigan's father, Mark Merrow Merrigan, who's a great guy. And as I respect his opinion, Mark, this entire episode, I'm not going to swear, but I am going to do a lot of boat puns.
You're not going to swear.
If you drop the F-bomb once, every time you drop the F-bomb, you give €5.
€5?
That's a lot.
€2.50.
Because he's going to curse at least 20
to Ballyrack Football Club. Your old football club.
That's like paying me subs.
Yeah. Well, €2.50 for every drop, every F-bomb you drop.
All right, I'm into that.
Deal.
That's a deal.
Love it. Just made that up there.
Danny edits this, so if he's going to edit, like if it gets too expensive, he's going to edit out all the good material because there'll be full of F-bombs.
Well, no, every time he does an F-bomb, I'll just say €2.50.
All right, okay.
You can still swear.
We'll keep count.
I won't be swearing.
I can't make any promises not to swear.
I was going to say, this is going to be really hard. I'm going to be breaking out in a sweat. I'm going to be concentrating that much. The other person that we need to say hello to is Gary Mackle,
Gary, your number one fan.
Yeah, on Twitter gave us a little bit of a conundrum and told us he's going to stop listening if he's not on this podcast soon.
What's he going to bring to the table?
I was going
to
say, Gary, what's your problem, man? Where's the love?
Gary actually has about 2 million combined viewers for him and Gemma's wedding on The Brides of Frank.
Yeah, I watched it
myself. That's what he can bring. Really one, Gary.
He can talk to us. He was on that Brides of Frank. Superstar.
Yeah, and it was repeated last Tuesday for the fifth or sixth time. And he reminds us all the time.
They're getting their money's worth out of that episode, aren't they? Must be real cringy.
He just back from his holidays in Lanzarote, so Facebook told me about 10 minutes ago.
Who Gary Mackle was?
Well, Gemma had a thing up, yeah.
Lanzarote?
Yeah.
I've never been to Lanzarote.
I lived in Lanzarote for a summer.
How did that go for you?
Great.
Did you love it?
I drank a lot. Wasn't a healthy summer.
That's not like you at all.
No.
You give out to us if we even have an unhealthy thought. What are you drinking? Coconut water?
Coconut water.
How's that going?
Sensational.
Don't like it.
It's in the pineapple.
Very negative all of a sudden. That's awful. Yeah, I don't like that.
Do you not like coconut water?
No, because I got one before and I had lumps of coconut in it, and that put me off big time.
No, a bit of coca doesn't.
Yeah, not a fan of that at all. The other shout-out we need to do is to our best mate from Vegas.
Tony.
Oh, Tony. Anto, we're giving you the Irish trip now.
Anto. Anthony, thanks for all your sharing on Facebook and Twitter.
We met a guy in Vegas. It was around the same time that Graham and Donald Cerrone made friends.
Right.
And he's actually the guy who organised getting us the photo of Graham getting a lap dance from Donald Cerrone.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So he's been in touch with us. He's found the podcast through American iTunes and all that crack, and he's loving it and he's sharing it.
Well, dude.
So thanks for that.
And thanks, Tony. Yeah.
Who did the Brazilian listeners for last week?
Yeah, that was mad. Yeah, I'm convinced it's Rhonda. Has to be.
Has to be Rhonda.
Has to be Rhonda Rousey. Six listens in Brazil between Friday and Saturday. Sure, what else would she be doing after making weight? Like,
so. She's in the bath, in the salt bath with all the towels on her, listening to us talking shit.
That's it. Graham wishes Rhonda Rousey could hear him while she was in the bath. You little creep.
Something creepy about that.
Yeah, nothing at all. But anyway,
that's the housekeeping out of the way.
That is the housekeeping out of the way. Yeah. So, actually, just really on Ronda, what did you think?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's Ronda. You're
still gonna box the head off her, you reckon?
I'll be there, yeah, for sure. I just hope she doesn't retire before I get there, you know.
She's younger than you.
She's got younger.
I know, but she wants to retire undefeated, so, you know, if she gets a sniff of me, she might retire.
That's how she's shite now, she's listening to this in Brazil.
Yeah,
You're modest, aren't you?
Yeah.
Do you watch UFC at all?
No, I don't. Oh, I'm going to have to start watching it now.
Yeah, this is going well over your head. Like, what am I?
She listens. She's very good at pretending she knows what I'm talking about when we talk about this while we're training and stuff.
I'm very good at... Yeah, everybody has to be very good at pretending they understand what you're talking about.
You're going to pretend you've been sailing. So
it's true.
I think Ronda's going to become a lot more mainstream now for other female athletes. So a lot of people that I've seen on social media have just... Like a lot of celebrities this time around on the lead up are just tweeting pictures, come on Ronda, come on, do it again. Yeah. You know, I think she's just brilliant. I love her to bits.
Exactly. So she absolutely dominated in Rio. And this is the best segue I've ever done in my life. Somebody else is going to dominate in Rio.
You! Sounds good. Yeah. Good thing.
Smooth.
I'm getting better at that bit. Getting better at their little connections. It's not good when I actually point out, did you see that?
Danny.
Coming from you. I'm modest, I swear.
I never pretend.
Lindsay Modest Style.
Yeah,
I'm going to change my name because of how modest I am. I won't. I'll batter you. I'll say that, but like,
yes,
I wouldn't even make it to the door. The door's like 6 foot away and she'd have me dead before I even got near that. Anyway.
Saskia's on her road to Rio, yeah.
She is. How's that all going for you?
Good. It's quite a long road, but it's been good crack so far. It's pretty full on campaign with the sailing. Basically living on the road for 4 years. So when I do come home, I'm living in the gym here in Elite. I suppose coming home to the gym is like coming home to family now. Yeah. I spend more time in the gym than I do in my own home.
It's like Christmas when Saskia texts me because she's like, Lindsay, I'm home because we train together. We lift together. We do like conditioning strongman sessions together or whatever. And it's great to have another strong woman that's ambitious, that's working towards something. And she comes home, she's like, I'm home. And I'm like, let's get in and do some strongman. And I'm like, how long do I have you for, Saskia? When are you gone again?
Normally it's about 4 days. And then I'm off.
Even to arrange this, it was when is Saskia free?
But even the guys that work in the gym will always just, when Saskia walks in, I'll get a text, Saskia's back, like just to let me know. I'm like, yes.
How did you get involved in sailing, Saskia?
Yeah.
It was a bit random, actually. So I suppose in transition year in school, at the time we had like a year off to sort of, I suppose the idea is to go off and find something that you can see yourself doing as a career. And I was never great at the old... like joining in the career guidance classes, and I knew that like I wanted to do something that a career that was like a lifestyle, and I went off and joined in a sailing course down in my yacht club, the Royal Irish Yacht Club. I'd done a bit of sailing as a kid. My family's not a sailing family, so
they're not a sailing.
No, they're not. So I'm they're very into sport, but I sort of got the sailing bug. I didn't enjoy racing at all until I did this kind of course in transition year, and there was a program available for one person to be taken on to kind of take a year out and be trained by one of our Olympic guys at the time who was going to Beijing. And I did that for the year, and I won our national championships and qualified the country internationally for it was the Youth Olympics at the time, and actually that was in Brazil that year too. So at the time I remember being there, and I had an interview in Búzios, which is about 2 hours north of Rio, and I was sitting there and they asked me, like, could you see yourself going to the Olympics? And I was like, I think I'll see myself going to the Olympics, maybe not in the boat that I was in at the time, but like, I definitely am going to try. And little did I know, I'd be back in Rio, in Brazil. So it's a nice sort of story, I suppose. But now it's come to the kind of hard working part. So
was this after 1 year in the sport?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So I definitely would put it down to like hard work. I think there's a lot of people in the sport who are have grown up in it and they're quite talented at it. And I would definitely put my achievements down to just sticking at it. And it's nice because I sort of feel like when I meet other girls coming through, or, you know, even the guys, but I've more kind of interest in the girls coming through saying, you know, if you want to do it, you can do it. Like, there's nothing stopping you. You just have to put the time in. So,
and do you think because you did it through the transition year course, would it have been a scenario where whatever sport or whatever course you had done that time, you would have got to the top? Or do you just think you loved sailing?
I don't know. Like, I've always loved competing in sport at a real high level. Like, I played netball, a game which I don't, not many people know of, but it's a really good game. It's a quick game. And I used to play netball for Ireland for 4 years. So for me, like, I always love pushing myself to the top of the sport. And netball isn't an Olympic sport. And I think if it had been, I would have continued in it, because I sort of felt like it was unfortunate because it wasn't supported by the Irish Sports Council, because it's such a minority sport, you can understand why. But when the sailing came around, I just saw this opportunity to go, you know, further in it, and it's quite a long road, so I felt like I had time to progress in it and learn the skills. So
you said you had to take a year out to get what sounds like a scholarship kind of situation for it, like.
Yeah, it was more. It was more that, I suppose, in transition year, you just sort of take time out to do internships and things. Yeah, and yeah. I was doing kind of, I suppose, an internship in sailing. So, yeah,
like, that's what, you're about 15, 16 transition year, isn't it?
Yeah.
So would that be considered kind of late to start in competitive?
Yeah,
sailing,
definitely. Like? It's pretty late. I mean, I first did. I mean, I didn't have a clue. You know, I mean, I literally didn't have a clue, and it was quite amusing because I progressed so quickly that suddenly I was on the Irish team and I had to meet all these criterias that, you know, I showed potential in my kind of, I suppose, drive to do it, but the things weren't clicking quick enough. So it was a difficult situation because I progressed so fast. I suppose it's like any learning curve, you know, you shoot up the learning curve so quickly, but at some point you're gonna have to stop and reassess, and you'll have to meet another level at another point, so it's gonna even out at some point. And
most girls when they're, or lads even, I'm not, you know, when you're 15 16, it's not about sort of saying I'm gonna be an Olympian. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you kind of go, or were you always just that competitive that you always had a drive, you weren't really,
you were 16 at a tournament in Brazil and you're asked, are you going to be an Olympian?
I don't know,
she's wired differently.
I'm competitive, like, maybe I wouldn't say in like an unnatural way or like not a good way. It's just I think I just like to be a bit different.
Was the netball 4 years prior or during all this?
4 years prior. And 1 year during. Yeah, and I had to give that up because that was a team sport, and at the time I was on my own in the boat, so it wasn't fair to the team for me to be dipping in and out when I was doing that. So, I think I've just always been competitive. I love sports, so I was only saying to Lindsay earlier, I was like, my God, I go one day without doing exercise and I'm an absolute nutcase. Like, I can't, you know, no one can deal with me. It's like, if I don't eat, I'm like the most angry person ever.
Hangry. We diagnosed this a couple of episodes. Well, that was with Tony, actually, wasn't it? Yeah. Top of your hangar. But, so with all that then, you're going from, I suppose, a regular enough 15, 16 year old transition year, all that kind of thing. As Graham said, you're just landed in Rio, you win a championship, you're asked, you want to go to the Olympics. At what point does your brain start to turn over and you kind of go, yeah, no, I genuinely do see myself on a boat winning, potentially winning a medal at what is the biggest sporting games in the world, like?
Yeah, I suppose it's something which most athletes go through. I suppose it's sort of, you know, you have to believe you can do it and you have to be able to actually visualize yourself, you know, in the boat, in that winning position. And until you can do that, you're not going to get there. And that's something, you know, this year we feel like we've come to that point where we can you know, I sail with another girl, there's two of us in the boat, Andrea Brewster's the helm and I'm the crew. So, you know, the two of us have to work together as a team, and it's tough. It's like a marriage. It's, you know, you both have, both in it because you love what you're doing and you share interests, and but, you know, yes, you're going to disagree on things, but you have to get through it at the end of the day if you want that to work. And yeah, I think as every athlete goes through, you have to visualize yourself in that podium position to reach that point.
You said you started in singles. How long did you stay there, and then when did you go into team sailing?
I was in a single-handed boat called a Laser Radial for, it would have been 4 years. And then when I aged out of youth sailing, which is under 19, I actually came off the Irish team at that point and had to kind of reassess what I was going to do, because at the time, a fellow teammate of mine, Annalise Murphy, who was in the last Olympics, and
she done really well.
And she did really well. She finished fourth. She, you know, it was amazing what she did for Irish sailing and for female sport. And it really raised the profile of sailing, which is great for Ireland, because we're an island and surrounded by water. So, you know, it'd be nice for a few more people to understand our sport. But yeah, I came out of that boat because I just didn't see myself competing against her for the next cycle, and I felt like there was more opportunities if I was creative to go into a different class. I actually moved away to Australia for 7 months and sailed semi-pro boats called 18-foot skiffs. It's kind of like a Formula One circuit of boats. They're like sponsored fast boats that that race in Sydney Harbour. And it's a cool circuit, and it runs for 6 months of the year. And there's betting involved, and there's a real whole atmosphere around it. And I was really lucky because we were the first all girls team ever to sail one of these boats. So there's amazing. Three people in a boat, and it's a brutal boat. Like it really put us through our. We basically had to be lads for the whole.
When you say brutal, what does that mean? Like
it's. When you capsize, you get thrown out of it, into it, you know, like the thing, it's like, the only way I can describe it is when we capsize, it's like being thrown off a bucking horse. Like it's that sensation of just being like, wow.
Whiplash City, like.
Yeah, it's a bit like a car crash scenario, but luckily you land in the water, you know, so it's not, you know, too bad. But if you do get thrown into the boat, it's quite painful. Like I had quite a few injuries, and that's the biggest thing about the sport we do is the injuries. I mean, I get injured a lot, even though we put everything into, you know, strength and conditioning. It's still tricky because
it does look like it's like I watched a couple of races or clips on YouTube and that kind of thing. Obviously, because when I found out we were going to be talking to you, I was like, I better learn something and not be a complete tool. Like, but it like I did say when I was getting old as well. Do you know when I was watching it, I was like, oh. That looks sore on the knees. That looks tough. Like, are you not just in bits after it? Like, you're trying, how hard would you train out on, like, not, never mind in here in elite, like, but if you're out in the water for the day, how grueling would that be?
Training on the water is really difficult. There's nothing I can do on shore that replicates the training on the boat. I mean, we do 4.5 hours on the water, and that's door to door, but like it would be 4 hours 20 minutes basically of a full on. And I mean, thing is with there's so much endurance in it and strength that this is when I, you know, when I've come into elite and then I've been talking to Lindsay and, you know, James and everyone else about like trying to replicate what I'm doing, it's so difficult to focus on one thing because the positions I get put in the boat, it's like a combination of like yoga, Pilates, strongman, you know, lifting.
What about the rowing machine over there?
Like 4 hours.
You're not going on the rowing machine. Does that not help?
Yesterday she was like, so Lindsay, there's this time when I have to pull a rope and I'm bent over like this. What exercise could I do to replicate that? And we were both playing around, but we got something, didn't we?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's difficult because when I'm in the gym, you've got 2 feet on the floor, but like when you're in the boat, you're being thrown around, and like, you know, I'm trying to balance on, it's like balancing on a surfboard, trying to like lift weights. It's pretty tricky at the same time.
And Saskia, like fighters as well, has to make weight. She has to be a certain weight on the boat. So then we can't have her doing too much that she'll put on muscle weight. So we have to keep her in strength training, but have her conditioned.
I didn't know. I didn't know that you have to make weight. Yeah.
Well, not make weight, but
you have to be. You have to maintain.
It's like an ideal combination of weight. It's like so. It's about like 130 kilos combined weight for the two members on the boat.
I'm not getting on that boat. I'm not making that boat.
Remember, we went fishing years ago.
Oh yeah, that was deadly. This is going to show you how little me and Graham know about anything. Right, my experience of having to do with underwater comes from going on the HSS twice and watching. Right, genuinely, I know nothing about.
I've nearly been run over by the HSS. So
when you were out there.
Yeah, when I was little though, when I was a kid, I mean, right. It scared the life out of me.
We went fishing before in Dunleary Pair.
Turned into the perfect storm, Graham.
Dunleary Pair, we went with our friend Dennis Brock. How are you, Dennis? And we were finished fishing, collecting loads of mackerel, and we were thinking, oh, this is deadly. We have two buckets of mackerel.
I didn't think it was a sorry. I just want to stop you there. I did not think it was deadly.
No, but let me finish. When okay, we got off, bleeding bow, we're like, what we do with the fish?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I don't want it. And we had two full buckets of mackerel. And we're knocking around the neighbour's doors here. Do you want some mackerel? How much? Oh, no, you can take the lot. But on the way in, when we were finished fishing, Dennis looked over to Hoat, and there was just a grey cloud over Hoat, and you could see a storm brewing. And he goes, we'll go through this before we dock in. It's like, what? I was saying a few Hail Marys and Novenas to make sure that we got...
Yeah. I think I was just curled up in the fetal position hoping I didn't die, to be honest. But yeah,
so that's their experience of sailing.
That sometimes too. There's definitely days where I'm like, wish I wasn't out here. But like,
is there days where you'd bring a fishing rod and just go fishing?
I wish there was time to even drink water on our boat.
how big a part though is that, like, because as I said, me and Graham had that traumatic experience going through the perfect storm, like, how much do you have to judge whether, like, how far in advance would you, when you're out on the boat, would you be kind of looking at the sky going, that's coming our way? Like, well, how does that all work?
So, like, my job on the boat is to really have all the information on, like, the weather for the day. So, like, we know what, especially for racing, because that's, like, what our racing is about. It's about sort of trying to be one step ahead of the other girls on trying to judge on what's the best route around the course using the elements. So if we're training, we just know the weather forecast for the day. So basically we can set up the boat to that wind strength so that we're not carrying too much power.
But our weather is so unpredictable. How can you do that?
I know, it is kind of
like three, four seasons in one day.
It's also, I suppose I have to do it by eye too. So like I would learn how to read clouds. This is what I do when I'm not in the gym. I would learn how to read clouds, read, like, when I look at the water, I can see what that, like, puff of wind's going to do to us.
Could you read the weather after the 6-1 news?
Well, I don't know. Why have I heard that after this? Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's that aspect to the sailing as well. So I suppose it's up to me to know what the water's doing, like the tides, like how the movement in the water is going to affect us on the course. So yeah, there's a lot more to it when you kind of look into it than just trying to stand up on
some
the boat.
Split second decisions mid race.
What kind of, I know speed is a knots with boats, that's about all I know, so roughly what kind of speed would you
I worked it out as it was about, I think you double it, so I think it's about 25 kilometers per hour, right. Max.
Okay. Maybe. Which probably doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're with just the wind behind you and on a boat, I'd imagine.
For anyone who understands knots, we travel at 25 knots.
Yeah.
Is our max 25 to 27 knots, which is a substantial speed for a boat. And that's what makes it so difficult, is that when we're traveling and we have to change direction, we have to change sides of the boat, and you have to time everything. You have to synchronize everything. So Andrea, the girl I sail with, and I, we train so that we synchronize our movements, that our like every footstep is the same. And it's difficult because I'm 6'2" and you know, she's 5'5". So, you know, when I take one step, she gets to take two. So it's actually a problem we've had to kind of overcome, because I've had to slow down at times so she can keep up and steer correctly. And if I'm too early, I mess up her steering. So the only way I can describe it is kind of, I suppose it's like rally car racing. Like, my job is to read the course, and she has to trust that I know what's coming and that I've studied the course. And, you know, she's doing the driving, and it's as if I was doing the changing of the gears, I suppose.
Are you like the co-pilot?
Yeah,
the pilot and
kind
the co-pilot.
Of, yeah. It's like kind of like that, but it's more, yeah, I mean, it's a very 50-50 job.
Yeah.
But we both have to do different things because our focus is on different parts of the race course or different parts of the boat when we're sailing.
So you were saying about the you have to look in advance at the course. Can you take different directions than your competitors?
Mm-hmm.
You can.
Yeah, you can. I mean, so how it works is that for the Olympics and the World Cup, it's all the same race course when we go. So what changes is the venue, so the type of sailing conditions we're going to get, the different wind strengths, and the different wind strengths will bring the, it's how you sail the boat differently. So when it's really windy, it's about trying to keep maneuvers really minimal, because it's too risky to do some maneuvers because it's easy to capsize, and once you capsize, you lose all your competitors. And in light wind, it's about being almost like ballerinas on the boat. You know, it's about being really very kind of quiet footsteps across, trying not to make too much movement and keeping the boat fast. So the course is just on days when we're having bad days, what we think about is like, really what we are doing is racing around big inflatable marks in the middle of the ocean. And it's really not that important, but obviously it's our job, so it is at the time. But when we're having a bad day, we just remember they're just big inflatable marks. That's it.
You're saying, like, you touched on there that it's your job. Like, me and Graham are on about having a little desk job, a little office job, and then I'm kind of looking at it and saying, well, hang on a second, you're hanging off the side of a boat. Like, how... I can't even get my head around that, to be honest with you. But how do you even explain to people who ask you, like, oh, what do you do? And you're like, yeah, I hang off a boat for a living. Like, how much does that, do people, sorry, what?
Yeah, it's hard to explain. I say, like, when you say it first, they're sort of like, oh, this one, like, she, you know, like, easy life for her, you know. And, like, in a sense, yeah, I am really lucky. It's been a great opportunity to get involved in this. And I couldn't have done it without, like, my family. They've been incredible in supporting me. But yeah, it's a very unusual job. It's one which is, as you said earlier, like, physically really demanding. And it's not something which you can stay in for too long. But I don't know how to describe it. It's just, sometimes, to be honest, when I'm looking at training video and stuff, I'm like, is that us? You know, because it is surreal at times. Yeah. It is a really strange thing to see. And it's an unusual sport to be in, especially the boat we're in. It's so complex.
So tell us a bit about it, because it's Team Brewster Tidy. That's and it's the 49er FX. Now, I'm saying that as if I even know what that remotely means, but give us an idea of what that means, the type of boat, like, what exactly is the breakdown.
So the 49er FX is the female women's skiff for the 2016 Olympics. 49er stands for 4.9 meters. So that's the length of the boat. The boat looks like it has wings. So we have the boat sort of, it's quite wide, and our mast is 19 feet. So it's quite a big boat for two people to sail. There's a men's version, which is just called the 49er, and they sail the exact same hull, but they just have a little bit bigger sail area. So they take on a bit more power. But essentially, everything we do on the boat is the exact same as the boys. So this is the first time the women's 49er FX is going to be in the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite an exciting cycle for us because, you know...
So all your competitors in the race are in the same boat.
Yeah.
Boom. Danny Adevo, he got that in.
He did. He got in there.
No, but they're all at the same boat.
Yeah, they are. So it's a one design class. So
okay,
it's
like a weight class. It's everyone has that.
So
boat.
We're all in the same boat, and we are, so our equipment's all the same. And I suppose what's different is our weight combinations.
I was just going to say, would they have like even split girls and then one big, one small.
Yeah, like I would be the tallest in the world currently, I would say. So like our combination is I'm very tall, my skipper, she's a bit shorter.
Would that be suited? Like, is that what it should be?
I mean, to have height is a massive advantage because it gives you leverage, which means that basically you can take more power on for longer. So yeah, and then you know what is ideal is that if I get down to being as light as I can whilst maintaining my strength, it means I'm never going to lose my height. So you know, I'll be a lever, but I won't be dead weight in the boat. So we'd have advantage, you know, in all conditions. And then there's other teams who are sort of both girls at the same, and they're both the same weight. And then there's some girls who are tall skippers and small crews. It just, at the moment, because it's a new class for the girls, it sort of hasn't settled down yet on what's the ideal sort of combination. So everyone's just basing it off who's doing well. So I think it'll be interesting for 2020, you know, what sort of happens then.
So the obviously the big one is the Rio Games, but it's a long road to get there. You and Andrea aren't actually a team all that long, are you?
No, we were sailing separate. We were sailing with other girls before our combination. And we were actually competing against each other at one point. But the girl Andrea was sailing with, she's one of our best friends. And she actually got her place in medicine in Trinity. And you know, she just knew that it's such a sacrifice to do this campaign. Mm. You can't have a career or study or do anything and this sport because it takes you away from home too much. So she had to sacrifice her Olympic dream. But she is like, you know, she's, I suppose she's in it because she's with us through the journey, which is really nice. And then I used to sail with another girl who decided just it wasn't for her. And Andrea and I joined up in 2013, the very end of 2013. So we're pretty new in comparison to most teams who've been sailing together. And yeah.
Presumably that's a very short learning curve then to start the qualification process for an Olympic Games. Like.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it puts pressure on you in different ways to maybe other teams. But then it's an advantage in ways because I suppose, I don't know, I mean, like I think this is a long road and, you know, you have to be able to get on with each other. And I think, you know, if we are from different, she used to sail lasers before, so we're both from single-handed classes. So putting two single-minded people together, you know, it's a challenge in itself. And it's probably better that we haven't had a team around us because we can just focus on each other. Mm. And you basically have to be like Siamese twins, the two of you, to sail this boat.
Yeah.
You have to try and be thinking alike and, you know, feeling the same feelings and...
So, I suppose then, with the qualification process, how far into that are you and how much more have you guys got to do in order to book your place? And
so, our next chance of qualifying Ireland for the Olympics will be in November this year. It will be our World Championships, which are in Argentina. There will be three slots available for three nations. And so yeah, I mean, we've already gone through one qualification round, which was last year, where the first 10 nations were selected, and basically Brazil gets a spot anyway because it's Rio. So 10 other nations were selected at the Worlds last year. We finished 12th nation, so we were just outside of the qualification. And there's probably over 30 nations competing for the games.
Sounds very competitive.
Yeah. So it's a constant battle just in the world rankings, I suppose, to hold your position. So Argentina will be our next shot, which, I mean, we expect to qualify there. And, you know, if something, you know, isn't to go to plan, then March 2016 will be a continental qualification. And Europe, at the moment, we think has... maybe two slots in that.
Yeah.
So we're at the moment we're looking at about six slots that we you know, could potentially get. Could get, yeah.
That's mad that Brazil gets a spot, isn't it?
Well, that's where the games are, though.
It's the nation.
Is that covered in all the sports?
Pretty much, isn't it? Sure, yeah. Look at Team GB, really? And the last one, the football. Team GB don't have a football team, but then the last Olympics, do you know what I mean? They always...
Yeah. I didn't know... Would that be for the athletics and all that they wouldn't need to qualify? If they host, like, similar to the World Cup, the host nation?
I'm not sure about athletics because that's...
It's times, it's not times.
Yeah, it's slightly different, like, but with something... Like one that is, I suppose, an inaugural game sort of class as well, it'd be different, I suppose, because they don't have anything to base it on previously.
Oh, okay. And then, yeah, it's inaugural for that class, yeah, yeah.
I'm winging that, by the way, I have no idea.
So what happens with the 3 slots at the Worlds then? So if anybody that's already qualified gets them...
They don't count. Because we're all still, I mean, those nations who have qualified, they may be part of a team of 5. So they're all racing for who's going out of their country.
Okay.
So they'll go to the Worlds and use that as their qualifier. But there'll be 50 of us on the race course. That, you know, there's 30 nations, say, but there's about 50 to 60 competitors we're racing against all the time. Yeah. So, and that's difficult too, because in sailing, it's if you're trying to be in the top 10 to keep your scores low, if that top 10 is constantly... filled with the people who've already qualified and you end up having a collision with someone, you know, at the back of the fleet who isn't normally at the front, it's you know, it can be pretty detrimental to your result.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's, I suppose you just have to look at it as another event, and you know, if your standard's good enough, you'll come through and you should be able to qualify, and if it's not your week, it's not your week.
You know the way you and your current partner at the moment, you've only got together at the end of 2013. So you were doing your own thing up to that point with other partners, and so was she. So is there a spare boat there, or how does it work? Like,
as in, where did the other boat go?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, both of our partners stopped competitive sailing.
Yeah.
So really, there's just Andrea and I, who are the girls, I suppose, at the moment in this boat in Ireland. And... I mean, hopefully there'll be more coming up through the system, and hopefully we've inspired more to do it. As I said, it's a really difficult boat to kind of get your mind around to go into, because it takes, you know, a lot of logistic planning. You know, when we, for example, just to get to Argentina, we need to ship a container to Argentina with our boat and all our equipment. But in the meantime, that's going to take 6 weeks. But in the meantime, we need to train. So you have to have another boat available in Europe to train in. So there's
Is it a case where the Sail in Ireland has this boat and you guys have been picked to use this boat?
Now it is.
Okay.
But when you start off, it's your responsibility to meet a criteria. So... Yeah, the investment in the beginning of this is huge, and we've certainly experienced that, because there have been no girls before us to kind of get the ball rolling, I suppose. You know, we've kind of had to, set the bar.
Mm.
So when I say I hope when other girls come through, it's easier. Like, I hope that we've done enough that when they come through, you know, they don't have to go through that massive financial kind of input at the start.
There might be some funding for them.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, Irish sailing needs, it does definitely lacks funding, and it's not a big team, so it's just difficult, because it is an expensive sport, but it's managed well being a small team, and I think if, you know, there were a sponsor to come on board for the team, it could be done really easily. And
I was going to say, is that where sponsorship obviously plays a huge part in it, then? Have you guys been fortunate enough with sponsorship, or how is it?
It's difficult to find financial sponsorship. We've been extremely lucky with Volvo Ireland and Spirit Motors Group. They've been our vehicle sponsor for last year and the whole of this year. And they've provided us with a Volvo to drive our equipment around Europe. I mean, it got to the point before they came on board where we didn't actually think we'd be able to get to the event, because last year we did 13,000 kilometers of driving just to get to our venues.
Yeah.
So that's time where we're not able to train. You know, if you're in a slow car, it takes another day. You know, we would do 19 hours driving straight just to get just to get there as fast as possible so that we can get to bed and like get back training. So yeah,
not run out of petrol along the way.
Yeah we've had some funny incidents. I mean, like, we ran out of petrol on the French motorway, and apparently you can't be towed off the motorway. So I had to run to a petrol station, which is 12 kilometers away, with like empty fuel tanks.
Good at cardio doing anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I was
getting photo updates of her on the motorway running, like 12K done.
Yeah, I was actually complaining about half an hour before, like, oh, I hate these trips. Like, I get so stiff, I don't get to do exercise. And then, like, chug, 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 and the car just stops. And I was like, oh my God. That was actually quite amusing.
And didn't you wind up having to go to the garage twice?
Yeah, I went there first and it wasn't enough. And then I came back to the car and I was like, this is a joke. So I took her back.
So you had to do two trips on foot.
Yeah, on running the lay-by. And I think I counted like 27 like honks. I was like, this is the most embarrassing thing I've ever done. I was wearing this massive purple like puffer jacket. So I looked like a blueberry. It was so funny. Or a blackberry, more like it. It was awful. I was just running around the French motorway.
How did you and Andrea decide who done the running?
Well, I'd been whinging, so she was like, get your runners on and go running. Otherwise, I'm going to have to listen to you again. So I went running. She stayed by the car. And then the third time, I thought I was going to have to go back because it still wasn't enough. And this, I was like, I'm going to have to hail someone down because like I can't run another 12K.
You'd have run a marathon at that
stage. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, okay, it's going to take hours. And I literally like stuck out my hand and this van pulled over and I was like, oh my God, that was a bit easier than I thought. Like, I hope I'm not going to be kidnapped here or something. And actually it was like a group of 16 skiers going skiing and I got in the back and I was like, hello. And they were all like, all right. I was like, can I have a lift to the petrol station? And they were great. So yeah, I mean, we've had some funny incidents doing what we're doing, but it definitely, I mean, I would rather be able to get on a plane like every other athlete and arrive with my, you know, one bit of equipment. But
the more the competitions go on and the more success you bring, does the Irish Sports Council offer any funding? Because I know with other sports, if you win or if you podium finish, they might give you a couple of thousand here or there. Is that the same?
I mean, we are funded by the Irish Sports Council, Irish sailing team. And, you know, I suppose it's up to us at the end of the day to get the results and to meet the criterias. You know, as long as we meet the criterias, they follow through with the funding. I think it's more just with Irish sailing, it's more the sponsorship money would be good for equipment and helping with even entry fees and stuff. I mean, you know, we literally pay for the entry fee and, you know, everything like down to your food. Like, you know, that is our income, what we're getting through our results. Basically, you spend your income before you even get it. So it's quite difficult in that sense because
it's a big sacrifice.
Yeah, it's massive. And as I said, I'm lucky that we've had backing from even my yacht club, the Royal Irish Yacht Club. We had a fundraiser there and all the members were so supportive and that gave us a chance to have a new boat for the world. So yeah, it's just about trying to kind of
you have to get a new boat, do you?
Yeah, because the boat to us is like, you know, we look after our boats like there are like our kids, you know. I mean, like you become so attached to each bit of equipment and you know it so well and you know how it performs. And it's you just can't go to a world championships expecting a 1 year old boat to still perform like a new boat. And when we have a new boat, it's not just sort of like ordering a new boat, you know, you get to know the manufacturer and they're all one design, but you still want your boat to be, you know, set correctly and pick it up at the right time and know that it's put together right. And there's a lot, sort of a heart goes into the back of picking our equipment. And I think it's a tricky sport in that sense because you can't just go and just pick something off a shelf. Yeah. Like,
can't get a dinghy or nothing.
Yeah.
And is there like any kind of, you said there, fundraising? Is there any ongoing fundraising campaigns that you guys follow, or is there any?
Not currently. I am like you know, the Irish Sailing Association is trying to raise money for us as a team. So that next year, really, I suppose the pressure of the financial pressure comes off of all of us. I mean, you know, even the team members who've already been to the Olympics, you know, I mean, they've achieved so much, but yet they still, you know, in that position where it's a huge financial burden to keep it going. And, you know, it's difficult when it costs so much to even just get to the venue. And then there's that pressure on you as well to perform. And that's where you just have to blank it out, you know.
I was going to say, anything taking your focus off performing is not good.
You just, sometimes when you have to, you know, you've broken something or something has to be replaced and you're like, geez, that's another grand down the drain. And then you just have to hand over the credit card and just be like, deal with that one later. Because otherwise you could be there being like, no, maybe we can live without it. And that's not on, you know. Like,
so you're heading off to Rio now next week to the Olympic test event.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So heading off on Friday to Rio. And the test event starts on the 16th. It's a week of racing, 3 races a day.
Is it just testing the course?
Yeah, so it's like a mock Olympics for us. They're testing the sailing venue out there and the water and like the race course. So yeah, I mean, because it's a massive job for the organizers as well with the sailing, because, you know, it's not, I suppose, it's not like just turning up to an arena where, you know, everything's kind of laid out. Like, you're praying that the wind's going to fill in, you're praying that it's not going to be too much. You know, there's so many things that can mess up the organization of it that they just want to make sure that when it comes to that week, that we all get racing.
This is probably the worst time ever to bring this up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to say.
The water in Rio.
Is that, like...
It's supposed to be contaminated.
Yeah, 1.7 million times, I read. 1.7 million times above what they consider safe.
Yeah.
Which not just... dip yourself in Sellafield and be done with it. It is a massive issue.
Like, I mean, basically someone said, like, you're swimming in sewage, or, you know, like, you are. Yeah,
like, at the moment, you have stitches in your shin at the moment.
Yeah.
Like you said about injuries earlier. But, I mean, that effectively is a wound where if the water is that manky, your leg's going to fall off, Saskia.
Oh my God, don't say that. My mom will not let me go. She's already freaking out. She asked me, would I wear goggles earlier? No, that's not going to happen.
She came in the other day with her stitches and I was like, is your tetanus up to date, Saskia? She's like, I got one yesterday.
I mean, like, it's not great. I mean, I think the media has taken it to another level. I think, yes, science has proven that it's not great. But I do think
but it's
that,
the red,
like,
tops.
I mean, I feel like they're filming, like, the sewers and the back, like, rivers, like, in Rio. I don't feel, like, we're sailing out in the bay, and that's hopefully a bit more, like...
Only one,
you know, a wee bit more
above.
Cleaner. But we still have to launch in it. We still have to put the boat in the water and stand in it. But, you know, I think that a lot of teams have been out there already training and they've seen what it's like, and I think they'll have a lot of people around to help with as soon as you have a cut or something, like, you know, to have antibiotic cream
all that kind of stuff obviously has to play a part, like on the go mending or even just preparation, kind of saying we're going to need this, but it's just in case. Is that anything that would affect how you'd race, or is that...
I suppose it's more that, like, you know, if you do get, like, it's just being clever about it, you know, like, if you do get a spray of water in your mouth, you know, as soon as possible, like, try rinse it out with water from our, like, coach boat, you know, like, we all have coaches on the water in, like, inflatable, like, motorboats beside us, not during the race, but, like, in between racing. So more than likely you can wash out your eyes. Like, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if we do have a cut, I suppose, like, I'm bringing everything with me in case something like that happens. It's more stuff you can't prevent, like maybe getting a stomach upset and things. But you just have to be careful about, I suppose, the water, like washing your fruit and veg and salads and, like...
That's stuff I never even would have thought of, actually.
Yeah.
Like, something as simple
dietary
as that.
Wise, yeah.
Because all I'm thinking about is actually being in it.
What?
All I'm thinking about was actually being in the water. Never mind, actually.
Drinking
preparation, like drinking and then washing.
Because we've had long chats before, haven't we, about if Saskia's out in the boat for hours and she's literally just in her wetsuit and trying to think of snacks that she could literally stuff in her wetsuit that she could have a bite of if she's hungry while out in the water, but not, you know, first of all, affect her weight. Second of all, affect physically how she deals with stuff on the boat and stuff like that. So if you imagine you're stuck in this wetsuit and you feel like you might be about to get diarrhea and you're in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty horrible. Like, that has happened to a number of, like, my friends, like, who are sailing out there at the moment. Like, a lot of them have had stomach upsets where they're, like, just have to power through the day and, like, get over and done with. Like, yeah. It's a difficult sport in that sense because you're so far away from the land when that happens.
That's something I never even thought of either. Like, even if you do badly need a toilet or even just something as simple as I'm starving, what can I eat? Like,
yeah, but sure, it's grand because girls don't get the diarrhea on.
No. No, they don't even poo, Mary.
No, they don't.
No. But yeah, the food is, like, you know, an issue. And, like, I'm massively into, like, my nutrition and stuff because of having to keep my weight down. And I like it anyway because, like, you know, makes me feel good. And I've learned so much from being in here with Lindsay and, like, James and working in elite with the nutrition side of stuff. That has definitely helped my side of, like, you know, the sailing.
Yeah.
The weight.
Have you got better results because of that, do you think? Or?
I just think I've become a better athlete and I think I've got to know, like, my body better and stuff. Like, I now know what triggers things and, you know, how much I can take on before it starts affecting me. And, like, energy levels and stuff. Like, I know, you know, why I'm tired. And and if I don't, like, it's so handy to be able to come in and chat to Lindsay and be like, so I'm feeling like this, or, you know, what can I take if I'm feeling kind of flu-y, or, you know, I think.
So you wouldn't be out on sea and you wouldn't be saying to yourself, instead of Lindsay saying bringing the nice treats in your...
I'd be cracking open a Mars bar.
Yeah, you wouldn't be bringing a spice bag around.
No.
You do know what a spice bag is, though, don't you?
I do.
Yes! I do.
Have you had a spice bag?
No.
What is it with you athletes and your magic eating that you don't even have to eat?
I've never had a spice bag.
What?
We've never had a spice bag.
Lad, let me just let you in to Saskia's text the other day. We were training and she's like, Lindsay, I found a recipe for, you know, like chicken goujons, but they're made without breadcrumbs. It's like we made. So we had an excited little chat about that. And then we finished our training and about 4 hours later, Saskia sends me a photo of said homemade chicken goujons. Delighted with life that they were great. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Send me the recipe. That's the type of stuff we get excited about.
Right, this is...
Liz, you make my day.
Like. No, we won't explain air text that we get excited about.
This sort of thing, right? This is the part that I'm still struggling with, the whole food side of this, right? The training bit, I'm kind of getting a bit better with, right? But the food side of it. Today, for me lunch, right, with a tuna salad. Do you know what it tasted like, Lindsay?
Water.
Disappointment.
But we had this conversation the other day as well. I feel very hard done by when I have salad because I just don't eat salads because broccoli eats salad, Lindsay eats broccoli. That's the way I see it. Like, food eats salad. Like, you would never catch me eating a lettuce leaf.
You see, this is, right, in a restaurant, right, to me, salad isn't something you order. Salad is...
No, like, I would never pay for a salad. Off,
no.
Yeah, it's a promissory note that food will come. Yeah. Right? If a salad arrives in front of me, I'm going, that's a good sign. That means that the steak is nearly... It's a promissory note, right?
But a salad will...
I used
never
to be able to say
me.
That
never.
Word.
Yeah. So, like, but today I was like, no, right, it's been all right, you've had a decent enough weekend, let's stick to it. And I decided I'm going to have a bit of tuna, which is grand.
Yeah.
I said, I'll have that with, you know, this mixed leaf shit. And
was there no vegetables on option there or anything instead?
I threw in some pepper and there was broccoli, raw broccoli, which is even more impressive for me. Because I hate broccoli. Despise whatever you...
Why would you eat raw broccoli? It's ridiculous.
I'm not mad at a fan of the raw
broccoli. Yeah, no, I like it a little bit steamed at least.
Blanched.
Yeah, well, let's just go hardcore, all right? Let's just go hardcore.
No, that's great. Good. It's a good consistency when you're biting raw.
Raw, it'll keep you...
It is a weird texture, man.
It'll keep you regular as well.
I would just worry about you then not being full, not being satisfied with your meal, and then, so that's maybe at about 1 p.m, and then at about 3 p.m, you're like, fuck it, and I'll go to the vending machine.
No, didn't you know what I'd want to say? I had a Cajun chicken breast, because I'm a beast.
Good, yeah.
Do you ever have an off day with food, Saskia?
Yeah. I mean,
and
like,
what would your ideal off day dinner be? Shut up, Lindsay.
I'm actually embarrassed talking about this.
This is the bit where I'm going to start drilling.
Did you hear that,
so
Danny? Did you hear what Saskia just said?
No, what?
I'm actually a little bit embarrassed to say this.
Oh?
And what's with...
She's probably going to describe what was breakfast for me 6 weeks ago.
Go on.
No, honestly, because, like, I suppose it's not that I crave this stuff. It's just, like, after, like, a regatta of a week of sailing, like, I do have, like, 2 days afterwards where I could eat anything I want and it wouldn't affect me. I think my body's just still, like, working in that sort of, like, burning yeah. mode. I could eat, like, I would say I could eat, like, close to about 9,000 calories.
what would you have, though?
Well, I love cereal as a cheat meal.
Oh my
cereal goodness. As a cheat meal.
Cereal as a cheat meal.
I love cereal, like cereal for breakfast, obviously. And then I don't know.
Sorry, most people would be like, "Oh, fry." I'd have a fry, a breakfast roll. Yeah. No, Weetabix. That's a cheat, isn't it?
No, it's just I don't know what it is. I think it's like
cocoa pops. Though,
it has to be like cold milk, and oh, it's just so good. I was explaining this the other day to someone. I was like, it just has to be very specific. Like I have to have a base cereal, so it has to be like Special K or something very bland. And then a mixture of something else. Yeah. That'll be my breakfast.
So let's start again.
Like sugar
what would
hit
be
straight away in the
what
morning.
What would be your off day dinner food was?
Cereal, and then I'd have something like I'd have like a good like nice sandwich or something. Like I do miss stuff like bread now and then. That'd be good, and probably a nice sort of like. I don't know, like
so you wouldn't pick up the phone and on the other end you'd hear hello Domino's pizza. Or
maybe a pizza, yeah, if I'm away, but not Domino's. Like, I don't know. Not like takeaway food.
I'd agree.
I don't crave support. Like takeaway food. I just like nibbling on lots of different really bad stuff.
Carby food.
Yeah, just like real high sugar food what? Where by the end of the day, I'm like so wired. I need to be in a room by myself. I just.
And sandwiches and Cocoa Pops does that for you.
Yeah, it does. I just.
That's. Very boring.
I know, but then
it
the next day
she's wired just, differently.
That is ridiculous. I'm like a sandwich. That's I have that like every day.
What?
Sorry?
Not anymore. I mean, I used to.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when I'm at my worst is when we're traveling in a car for like 19 hours. And like you have all intention when you set off that like you're going to have your boiled eggs and you're going to have your like, you know, boiled chicken breast. And then, like 14 hours in, you stop at the next petrol station, and then you reach for the chocolate.
The boring boiled chicken breast.
Yeah, I didn't even know boiled chicken existed until 2 weeks ago when Cubes informed me that chicken's boiled. By the way, I was like, it's
boiled.
It's what? Sorry, she's like, it's boiled, and I was like, I couldn't.
Yeah,
like,
made it taste worse.
I hadn't noticed. Like, I'd taken about 4 bites out. I hadn't noticed the thing. It was only when she said it, all of a sudden, I was like, I can't. Eat
I always bake my chicken in herbs because it gets too dry otherwise.
Mm.
Yeah. What would your death row meal be then? If like you were told that's it, like one more meal and then you're done.
Oof, that's really difficult.
Daniel's know what yours would be. Yours would probably be, I don't know, maybe a cabbage leaf wrapped in broccoli.
Maybe a bit of kale.
I don't know.
Maybe probably a kiwi.
No,
the thing with kale is, kale was only discovered in about 2014.
Ah, no, man. That's not true.
Curly kale from Halloween.
In my life.
And why did you discover kale in 2014? Because they made kale crisps.
They were delicious,
I've never had kale crisps.
No. I'm not mad on them.
I can't imagine them being that tasty. To be honest. I'd imagine their texture
no,
is
they are
similar
tasty
to Holy Communion.
They were, you had chili and all on them. Yeah. They were lovely.
What would your death row meal be? That wasn't even a sentence, was it?
I don't know.
Pancakes might be mine.
Yeah,
I love apple pie and pancakes. Custard.
Yeah. So the trios would probably go like kind of desserty situation.
I think I'd have to beg for like a main and a dessert.
Yeah, two course.
I couldn't go for just sweet and just savoury. It'd have to be a combination.
All right, go on. You get to now start it. I'm not being that generous.
Okay.
Oh God, I don't know. Maybe like maybe a hamburger.
Hamburger.
Hardcore, Saskia.
Yeah. I think so.
like a
fancy hamburger.
I was going to say, because mine...
You know, like, one with, like... You know, when you put, like, the goat's cheese and all that, and all that.
I was going to say, mine would probably be Bunsen. You just don't know Bunsen.
I've never had Bunsen, though.
Bunsen?
Bunsen burger. Very cleverly
named. Sensational.
Oh, yeah,
it is unbelievable. Right, essentially,
were you telling me about this one in Vegas or something?
No, that's Fat Burger.
Oh, that's Fat Burger. That's on a different scale.
That's a different story altogether. Bunsen is... It's on Wexford Street or Camden Street.
Wexford Street.
I can never tell the difference between them two.
No idea.
And there's one of them at Barnow, but I haven't been to that one yet. Basically, it's they get a steak in the morning and they mince it. So that's what your burger's made of. Steak.
Lovely.
And then you go in, you order it, and they go, how do you want it cooked? And literally, their menu is burger, cheeseburger, double burger, double cheeseburger.
Their menu's on like a small card, like business card.
Yeah.
That's how small the menu is.
Really?
That's it.
It is unbelievable.
So it's a steak mince burger.
Yeah.
You don't have any bread in your burger, Dan, though.
Oh, no.
If it was his death row meal,
I definitely
have
two burgers.
What's she going to do? Kill me twice?
Make him do burgers.
You were sweating there for a second.
It was for a split second. It was in my head. I was like, oh, shit, what a
fucking mine, I was just, along those lines, I was thinking a good steak. With like some sweet potato wedges,
You wouldn't even just go for regular potatoes. You'd have to, even your last meal has to be healthy.
Maybe like garlic and cheese potatoes.
I think Christmas dinner would be good.
Christmas dinner. Oh no, I'd actually have a stew with loads of boiled potatoes. And then loads of white bread and loads of butter. Oh, jeez.
Have a stew sandwich. I used to do that. Yeah, that's good. Though.
People are going to be starving listening to this now.
I went down to the park yesterday and got a hog box, actually, in the market. It was the first time in months.
Remember, we got that, yeah, with the crackle and all.
It's pork and it's like, so it's cooked on a spit. It's spit roasted in front of you. And then you ask them for extra crackle and I love that. And he gives you, so mine had pork, onions, gravy and potatoes.
That was bowl for you, wasn't it?
Potatoes, yeah. I just trained, so I was allowed myself to have some carbs.
And gravy.
Yeah.
And gravy. What's wrong with you?
Because he makes it out of the pork juice.
Does he? Yeah.
Yeah. And then he had cabbage roasted or soaked in pork juice as well, and it was fucking delicious. You can get stuffing as well if you want, but obviously you wouldn't.
Christmas.
I couldn't finish it. So I surprised myself. I think cracklin, I had too many potatoes.
Cracklin.
Yeah.
That's
good fat.
Is it though?
Yeah. Oh, it's delicious.
So I'm still learning, man. I don't know all these things.
I like duck as well. Duck's
duck's lovely.
Yeah, I had duck the other day. It was gorgeous.
I have only ever had duck out of Chinese.
Oh, really?
So I've no idea.
Duck on those pancakes. What's that called?
No, I had it in Hoisin.
I don't know what I'm doing that.
I think it's just called duck and pancakes.
Duck and pancakes. I was going to say that, yeah.
It's the most obvious answer.
No, it's called something. There's a specific name for it. Wonton.
Wonton.
No. Wonton is like the vegetable little dumplings, isn't it?
I think it's wonton.
No, wonton's a type of frying
wonton's a
technique,
soup, isn't it? It's like it's deep fried.
I'm googling. Because I was right earlier on.
He's on the Google.
We had a disagreement
earlier on Mero was right in the end.
Yeah, me and Lindsay maintained that Daniel Cormier didn't make it to the Olympics, that he was back up, but it turns out at Athens 2004, he did get to the Olympics and he did wrestle for bronze, but he lost.
Yeah, I know you said that.
I had a, actually, dude, just while we're on the whole food and eating thing, right? Because the girlfriend's Russian, every so often the family try and force eat Russian food into me to try and make me one
my
of theirs.
My house makes
like
Polish, I get a lot of that.
And many a thing they've tried to get me to eat, and many a thing I've been like, no, not a chance. But they made these little things are essentially like little meatballs. They're like dumplings, I suppose, right? But like, they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm now like, here, Marina.
And did they wrap them in lettuce or
Peking
something?
Peking duck!
Aye, that's
it. Peking is the sauce, though. It's
frightened the shit out of me there.
Peking duck is what it's on the Chinese.
Oh, lads,
menu.
And I found out falafel is made with chickpeas. Remember last week we couldn't.
Did you not say something about chickpeas before being real? Oh, no, wait, that was hummus, wasn't it?
Which is made out of chickpeas, too. Yeah, they're high estrogen.
Yeah, I thought it sounded familiar.
So, yeah.
Might explain why Graham is such a bitch.
Man boobs.
What was it even talking about before this?
The little dumpling thing.
Yeah,
like,
shit,
I think
they're delish.
My Polish housemate's dad came over to visit and you could not get the man away from the cooker. He just kept making these dumplings and he'd wrap them in lettuce and fry them or boil them or something. And he had a lovely tomatoey sauce with them.
Yeah.
I think Adam was telling me that the Polish translation, I can't remember what they're called in Polish, obviously, was pigeon. So whatever Polish for pigeon is, that's what they're called.
Well, these are called pilimini in Russian.
Okay.
And it's one of like four Russian words that I have, one of which is barsuk, which means badger. I don't know why I know that. But we do that every week. I learn a new Russian word.
We need to talk to your girlfriend and talk to her about the vocabulary she's teaching you and make it a bit
more
useful.
One I learned myself.
Okay.
I was trying to learn Russian words, you know, just to have a conversation with
it's difficult, isn't it?
It's
you
ridiculous,
often talk
like
about badgers with your
never in-house. Not even once. When I even said it, they all just looked at me and said, you realise we speak English, you little freak. I was like, yeah, I'm just trying to join in, though.
Do you speak any languages, Saskia?
Not really. I mean, I can attempt Spanish, and my boyfriend's Brazilian, so I'm trying to learn Portuguese, but
there's the B word.
I'm literally awful at
what
languages.
Boyfriend.
Yeah, that's why we had to be very diplomatic about the water as well, because, you know.
I'm gone.
Oh, we were Polish. Our coach is Polish. So, like, I was trying to learn a few words. But yeah, no.
Yeah,
considering I spent so much time away, I actually don't have another language.
Yeah, but it's also you spend English, your time in like 57 million countries, so trying to just nail down one language.
I know, it is quite difficult. You feel so rude when you go away and you're like, I'm so sorry I speak English.
But the 16 skiers that picked you up, what language? How was the communication?
They were English, actually, thank God.
Oh, really?
That would have been well
the
awkward.
Chances of that.
Yeah, I know. I was like, if these guys are French, I'm like, no hope.
you said bonjour earlier on that. Sorry, Dan. You said earlier on about the what's the shelf life of a sailor, and like Do you have, what are their plans afterwards? What do you do outside of sailing, kind of professionally, or?
Yeah, well, I suppose like quite a few of the athletes on the sailing circuit, like some countries, like have, I suppose, a rule that they have to do go to university as well. So some countries will facilitate that, so they'll have degrees. Like some of them are lawyers, and a lot of them are engineers. In Ireland, it's a bit more difficult. Like it's too hard to do something, and
you can't even be here long enough to train.
I can't even know, and there's not even like online sort of, you know, access to doing a course. But I suppose most female sailors normally age out at about maybe 35, which is like not too bad at the moment. Like for the type of boat we sail, like it's quite physically demanding, and like you have to sacrifice. Like you couldn't even think about having kids, I suppose, if you sail one of these boats. But and the guys can go on till they're, you know. Like there's a guy at the moment who sails for Brazil, and he, you know, was a medalist three times running, I think. And he then retired and then came back this year. And everyone's like, oh, you know, he'll never survive, you know, physically. And he's back on top again. And he's 40, he's like 45 or 46. So.
He's on the juice. Actually, speaking of that, you get tested, I assume, as well.
Yeah, we're... you know, fully tested. Like we're up for testing any time. So yeah, to watch everything down to like Nurofen Plus and like.
Can they just arrive at your door and just be like, yeah, here you go, off you go?
Yeah, I mean, like even like Lemsip Max and stuff, like simple stuff like that, you wouldn't even think about it. But like,
and who's like, how are you to know you're not to take Nurofen Plus or Lemsip Max? Are you told by a coach or?
We're given, the Irish Sports Council just releases a little booklet every year, and then it's just the MIMS.
And is it like, I suppose, because I read in Irish Sports Council kind of what not to take or whatever, and it was all very
like pseudoephedrine and
yeah. It's a dummy down for people like us.
No, like it isn't, and that's where like literally every time I go to like take something, I have to go through a doctor and be like, can I take this?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the day-to-day sort of, you know, Nurofen and stuff, like, you know, you can take that. And then I just look in the back of packets, like if it says pseudoephedrine and stuff, I know.
Like an app. I have an app the Irish Sports Council have, and you can type stuff into it and it just tells you yeah or no.
Very good.
I was going to say, actually, because even in terms of you training and sorting nutrition and supplements and all that kind of stuff, is there a thing that, so you could say to me and Graham, yeah, try that out, that might be, but then when it comes to an elite athlete, like
sometimes you have to be careful with some protein powders, or if you're prescribing like pre-trainers, which I don't like anyway, but some people will take it upon themselves to take pre-trainers, there might be some stimulants in it that might be considered banned, you know.
What's a pre-trainer?
Yeah. Like something like an energy thing you take before you train. So
like a kind of monster or something.
Yeah, well, no, but like, yeah, God. It's like, yeah, it mostly they're full of caffeine, to be honest, you know. You'd be as well to have a black coffee, but the problem with why I don't like them is generally if people are feeling tired for training, especially if you're working with an athlete, that means their adrenal glands are fucked. And if you throw a lot of stimulants on top of that, it just hyperstimulates an already fatigued muscle. And if someone goes into adrenal fatigue, which I put myself in out of overtraining in the past, nothing works. Nothing fires well. Like you lose strength, you'll put on fat, you'll put on weight, you know, you'll... A lot of women go into it from under eating. It's just a state of stress that your body goes into, but it affects everything else as well, in that your drive for life is gone. So you'll lose your sex drive. You'll be depressed. You won't want to get out of bed in the morning. And people think they're depressed, but oftentimes they're adrenally fatigued and they need to lay off the coffee, sleep a bit more, eat more calories. And then what I had to do it myself, I'd done it with James here. It was 1 year I had, I think I went 6 months with 8 fights within those 6 months. So there wasn't a week that I wasn't making weight. And then I'd fight, have a little binge, have to cut weight, fight, have a little binge, have to cut weight. And my body was just like, here, would you fuck off, you know?
Sorry to cut across, but that's 2 F-bombs. Is that deal with Ballyrack Football Club just with Danny?
Just for Danny, I couldn't promise not to curse.
Next week, the 2 years.
No, I was the one that got the warning, so it doesn't extend to Lindsay, in fairness.
All right, just get me dad to warn Lindsay then.
I don't know.
Sorry, continue.
He loves me. Yeah, so what I had to do then was increase my calories, because the problem is then I'm trying to cut weight and it's getting harder each time. So you reduce calories, so you put your adrenal glands under more fatigue, so you're wrecked, so you have to have coffee to go for your morning run. You're putting them under more and more stress, they're just not firing, you can't lose any weight, you can't make weight, so you train more, which makes it worse. So we had to just say enough. I had like a box cup in the UK, and I had three weigh-ins at that, because you had to weigh in every day, and I got to the final, and every single weigh-in broke me a little bit more. And when I got back, I was so sick. I pretty much gave myself the worst flu ever. I was fluid retention. I looked like I was having an allergic reaction to something, and James and myself were like, okay, that's enough. We need to fix this. So we had to just actually increase my calories, make me a little bit fatter, and then peel it all back. So that's the worry about stimulants for training. If you need to take something before you train, you need to look at why. You know, should you train earlier?
Why would Lemsip Max and Nurofen Plus be on the...
like the pseudoephedrine and like...
I think they consider that it's like anything that might be anti-inflammatory, they consider that it might be a performance enhancer, because like the likes of codeine that relaxes you might perform better. Like it's the likes of athletes always complain about like grass being a banned substance, because they're like, that's hardly going to make you faster if you're running, but actually it might help you to train through some pain that you might have, or it might just chill you out a bit. And they just look at it interfering with your performance.
It's definitely not an advantage in sailing to take anything. Not in the boat we're in. Like, yeah, there's, you know, that feeling of like, you know, endurance pain, but it's too many other things going on for you to, it would affect too many other things. I think maybe like something like cycling, where it's like a very sort of like, you know, it's like you're going in one direction for a long time, you know, and you're doing the same movement. And whereas for us, there's just way too much going on to control one sort of type of feeling that you need to perform.
I suppose maybe sailing might look at strength, like testosterone or whatever. It might be good for you to be stronger. But
yeah, that's probably what it is. But I mean, like, what's the point?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reality situation is, if a woman starts on tests and stuff like that, she's going to put on weight. She'll put on muscle weight, and then you're going to be too heavy for your class.
Yeah. Cyborg.
Yeah.
Big time, yeah. Yeah, you're going to have Christine an awful looking jaw for the rest of your life.
But sure, even if she could sweat, she's going to get destroyed.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. I think Joanne Bechkoa definitely at one point was juicing.
Listen.
Sorry, say it again?
I think Bechkoa, at some point, she was definitely juicing.
Ah, big time.
Generally, when you see a woman whose jaw is wider than her temples, it's a sign that she's been... Yeah. And you can tell by their voice almost. You can tell people's skin and stuff. And
don't like trust any of those Brazilians, unfortunately.
Are you just saying that because her boyfriend's Brazilian?
Is your boyfriend Brazilian?
Yeah.
Jesus, didn't know. I love Brazilians.
Well, you see, you don't want to make generalized statements either, but generally, like, so you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Generalization statement I want.
You know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu was never a tested sport, and it's only in the last year they tested in the world or something like that. So you have your own Gabby Garcia, I think is her name, who's like a multiple-time world champion. She's huge. There's no way she's not having juice for
general
breakfast, lunch,
statement was in relation to the most recent MMA stars.
Yeah, yeah.
That the drug testing has become so much stricter that a lot of the athletes that are being caught are from Brazil.
Brilliant, yeah.
A lot of legends that would have been considered legends in the game have all question marks over them.
Yeah.
So that's where my statement draw for. Apologies to your boyfriend.
But again, I suppose a lot of that is to do with the fact. A lot of that is to do with the fact that it did go for, as you said, so long. It's only in the last 12 months or so.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of people being tested and the Olympics in general and that kind of thing, I think they are pretty stringent.
But I don't know. I still don't trust it in that. I always think if the tests are so far behind the drugs, so
yeah,
it takes them to realize what people are taking to then develop a test to see that. So I think the people with the money are definitely on something. They're just cycling, and they're cycling off in time for tests and stuff like that. You know, you've seen Aldo when got that poor man arrested for trying to test him in his training camp for the McGregor thing before he pulled an injury and ran. I just wouldn't trust that anybody isn't juicing.
There's an Olympian by the name of Ricardo Blas Jr. I think he's Cuban, I think. And he's either a judoka or a wrestler. And he weighs 34 stone. There is no way he's juicing, man.
My God.
He's not juicing a carrot or steroids. There's no way he's juicing anything. He's 34 stone 34 and he's an Olympian. Ricardo Blas Jr.
I don't know. I need to know what that is in kilos, because that's how I...
It's more than what I started with you. I started at 200. Which is ridiculous anyway, but he must have been about 240 and 215.
476 pounds.
I'd bench you, Danny.
I know you watch.
216 kilos.
There you go.
Fuck.
And he's not limping.
And he's a wrestler.
Either a wrestler or a judoku.
So does he just trip up and squash the guys?
More or less. I think they try to get their arms around him. They can't. And yeah, he just falls over through his natural arm.
You want to get him into a second round, he'd have no gas tank.
Oh, stop.
Surely he's in a class people the same size, no?
No, but it would just get to a stage where it's plus. So yeah, it might be just like plus 100 kilos and all the guys might be 110. Imagine you're 105 kilos.
Going up against somebody who's
215. It's like Aki Bono, the sumo wrestler.
Yeah. But I was reading lots about the Olympics over the last few days, and I found that, and I was like, I think I remember. And then I remember seeing a photo of him, and I started watching videos.
And does he look like a brick house, or is he a fat mess?
He's a bit of a wobbly lad.
Yeah. Maybe he's a sumo wrestler.
No, definitely not. No, because he's from like Cuba or something. Lads, Google him, Ricardo Blas Jr.
Nothing junior about him.
He took 3 seats on the airplane going to London.
Fuck.
True story. They had to give him 3 seats. I have always managed to squeeze myself into one. Like, as horrible as it has been for people even sitting beside me. But they just gave him 3. They were like, there you go. I suppose that's what happens when you get to the Olympics. Isn't it? Wow. Have as many seats as you want, chief.
He's a poster boy in Cuba for the Olympics.
Yeah. I'm 90% sure it's Cuba. But
Saskia, are you looking forward to representing your country at the Olympic Games?
Making a splash. Oh, what?
How long have you waiting to say that?
It's been in my head for about an hour.
Yeah, it'd be a great honour to do that. And I think it's pretty much an honour every day going out sailing under the Irish flag. So it'd be awesome to
I'd be bawling every day down that. Yeah. Well, if I seen the Irish flag every day hanging over, just going side, I'd be bawling.
Yeah.
The emotional wreck.
Have you ever thought of hanging one off the back of your wheelchair like a cape?
That's a good idea.
Bombing down hills with just flutters
in
the breeze.
You won't be able to see that though, and it won't make you emotional then.
Oh, that's true, actually. We talk some about this shit. Oh, yeah. Well, no, sorry. I talk
some. there's 3 of us in it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Unfortunately for Saskia, she has to listen to it.
She has to put up with this bit as well. So, the qualification in, you're going to do it November. I don't care. Right? We've decided that's it. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
Do it November.
Is it in the head now? You say, another thing, actually, I wanted to bring that up when you said it. You were talking about, and a lot of individual athletes have the visualization in the head. I'm going to do this, end of story. You're always thinking like that.
Yeah, you are. And when something pulls you down, you have to come back to that. Because, it's the biggest roller coaster ever, this road, you know. And, it's what picks you up, you know. I just have to imagine myself, up there doing it. And know I can do it. And I know we can do it, Andrew and I. And you have to believe that in your heart, and it's just trying to find the right path and deal with each situation, good or bad. You know, it's like even when you do well, it's trying to just deal with being happy and I suppose, you know, over the moon about doing well and not taking it too far and being like, no, just bank that now, and it's all learning until we get there.
And do you see you're visualizing a podium finish?
Yeah.
Deadly.
So what will the next
Goosebump City there, lads?
Yeah.
You're twitching. You need to calm down, Graham.
You have to come to Rio for there.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. So if you do qualify in November though, what does the following 8 months or so until the games entail for you?
It's all coming on so fast. I think it's 104 days until the first race of our world championships, for our qualification. So really, the first step is this, and it's trying to, minimize injury and trying to get our training plan sorted out, logistics, so we're not wasting too much time in the air or in a car or, that sort of thing. And then after November, hopefully all going well when we've qualified, maybe go back out to Rio for a little bit and spend a bit more time on the water out there. Maybe not have too much time if it's for sailing in sewage, but just get to know the place better a little bit. And if not, and it wasn't our time, if it's not our time in November, hopefully we'll have enough money. Really, money is the biggest question mark in all this. Is can we afford to try and qualify the next time round? Yeah,
Can you set up like a GoFundMe or something? Like that might be a stupid question.
But yeah, I mean, you definitely can, but I suppose maybe close to the time. We've had a fundraiser recently, and it's difficult to keep going around with your hand out because, you know, you're the one who started. I'm the one who started this in the first place. So, you know, you in the back of your mind, you have to kind of know that you can support it. But yeah, I mean, it would definitely help. So, you know, maybe in a couple of months' time, I kind of think about it again and see, you know, if anyone's interested in helping out or knows anyone who's interested in having their name up on our sale at the Olympics.
We'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Give you €50.
That would be great, actually.
WTS part just blazing across the seas there. That's what we'll do. Yeah. Be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming now. Sorry, lads. Got a bit carried away there. Dude. But, yeah, it's. I just think it's mad, the whole Olympics thing, because it is such an elite level to be at, and it's within touching distance for you. So.
Yeah, I think it's strange when we're. See, I'm living in that world and we're around the same people all the time, and we're like a big kind of community in a sense, like the sailing circuit. So we do, you know, 8 different regattas a year with each other and train in the same places. So the Olympics for us, without downgrading it, is like, it's another event. Mm. It's the most elite event we can be at, and it's definitely not taking away from it. But if you can go into it being like, this is just another event, it's the same people, you know, everyone's game plan, or you hope to know, you know, after 4 years, and you just have to race the best you can race.
But this event, though, in comparison to the regattas, would be on a national scale.
Yeah.
Because the whole country gets behind all our athletes when
exactly
the Olympics comes around. So
yeah, exactly.
It's going to be amazing.
I think it's dealing with like the hype of it and like the media side of it and all that. I mean, like, we're exposed to that anyway, but I suppose with the Olympics and this test event as well, we'll get a good taste of that. And you're not only expected to just, you know, be selfish and get on with your job, like, you have to, you know, give an interview or deal with, if you had a bad day, talking about it. And you know,
do you find it hard to detach at all from it? Do you find it like, when you, even when you get home, do you get a chance to detach, or is it even when you're at home, you're still talking about it, still thinking about it, conversation around the dinner table, whatever it is, do you get time to switch off?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think that's where I'm lucky that my family isn't a sailing family. You know, when I come home, they're obviously hugely interested in what I do, and they're so supportive that they want to ask me. But they know that, like, when I come home, I just want to know about family. I want to know, you know, even what's going on in the news. I mean, like, I don't, when we're away, you're just in such a bubble, you never even get to just check what's going on. So yeah, I mean, coming home is great to do that. And when I'm home, I don't train at home sailing. Like, we only train abroad, just because of conditions and stuff. So when I do come home, I'm not near a boat, so I definitely get to pull away from it, which is good. So
is the boat in Brazil now?
The boat is in the UK at the moment, and we have I'm actually chartering a boat off a Brazilian out there, so that makes it a bit easier for us. But we hope to have our own boat out there come next year. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, look, thanks, man, for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
And putting up with the nonsense that's coming out of
our
mouths.
It's awesome.
If people want to follow you and learn more and keep an eye on you over these next couple of months, Team Brewster Tidy on Facebook?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page or a blog, which we're on pretty much daily, called Brewster Tidy Sailing. And we also have a Brewster Tidy Instagram or Saskia Tidy Instagram, and Twitter, Saskia Tidy, where I update on all the sailing stuff and also like foodie things and training in here with Linz, and, you know,
they got enough
so
for that.
Day to day. Day to day, just an Olympic sailing life.
James got a good shout out today during the episode. For people who don't know James runs Ellie. James Cummins, lovely guy.
He is actually a lovely, lovely blog. Actually, when I first started down here with you and I wrote that blog and all, he actually got in touch with me, and it was really nice. It was just, you know, it was kind of.
Oh, that was nice. So
me and James sometimes have a bit of a bromance, and Lindsay goes mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get a bit jealous, Graham. Graham loves the guys that train here, and just sometimes I wish he'd show me a bit of love. All he does is he just complains to me that I'm pushing him too hard.
He's too complacent with you, Liam.
Tells James he looks great, tells Matt he looks great, rubs people's beards and all. And
they,
I'm just,
they rub my beard.
I'm just the woman sitting there that built those arms that get him all the attention. But sure, who the fuck am I?
That's true.
That is true, actually. That's 7:50.
That's very good. We've been going a while. It really is.
Right, this is an hour and 24 minutes in, and I haven't said one. That's
good stuff.
That is the longest. Even in work, I don't make it that long.
Yeah. The only time I get on Christmas is when I'm in my grandparents' house. It just switches off for me. I don't know why.
And look, another tangent there. We were saying goodbye, and then another tangent.
We just go off one. No,
that is the tangent.
No, but in fairness, just to touch on what you're saying, in fairness to James and Lindsay and Damo and all the lads down here. It Austin. Is, like, look, it's, and Austin.
Matthew.
I don't know all their names, Graham, for God's sake. We can't all be little popular.
Well, yeah, I
was going to say, Graham likes them? Lick all their bums. So
I was going to say, dropping names all over the place. Oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. Get the boat, will you?
That's true.
But, yeah, it is. In fairness, look, it's a good setup down here. The lads are doing a great job. And obviously you have good athletes coming in.
Olympians,
You know, so check out Elite Training and Nutrition online as well.
Yeah.
Great bunch of people. You can check out Lindsay herself then as well on @LindsayDoylePT.
Everywhere
and anywhere. Merrigan, what's your Snapchat so people can send you notes?
Merrigamania. All my social media handles are Merrigamania.
Running wild all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm @DanJoeMurray.
Wheeling wild all over the place.
Sorry to bring that up again, Graham. That was rude of me, wasn't it?
My friend Kira earlier on goes, do you know the way you kick? It's just, oh, jeez, you can't kick.
do you get that a lot? Do you? People go, oh, jeez, do you know when your leg is... Never mind.
Do you remember Janine texted you? She was already down in oxygen. And you were like, is there anything I should know? And it was lashing or something. And she was like, yeah, bring your wellies. And you were like, you fucking tick.
Did you bring mudguards?
No, my chair was destroyed.
Was it?
Yeah.
That was your old chair, though, wasn't it?
It was the old crappy chair.
That was a little wreck
this
of a chair.
Not the Ferrari.
This is the Ferrari chair.
This thing, telling you.
Thanks, Barry Cook.
Barry Cook.
Right.
Probably Barry Cook, is it?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? We're meant to wrap this up about 10 minutes ago. Anyway, look.
Thanks Saskia.
Saskia, no,
look
thank
in
you.
All your future.
Thanks for having me.
Sailing comps. We're right behind you.
Thanks so much.
Come on, Ireland!
Well done, Graham.